Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to go ahead and call the Senate Finance Committee to order. Time is 3 p.m., August 23rd, 2001. With me today in person is Co-Chair Senator Bishop, online Senator Von Imhoff, Senator Wilikowski, Senator Olson, Senator Wilson, and myself, Stedman's here. We don't have an in-person quorum here, but we're not taking any action today. We're having an informational hearing. On today's agenda, this afternoon, we're going to have an overview of the beginning account balances of numerous accounts starting on the 1st of July of every year. And we normally talk about this issue in the verbiage of the sweep and the reverse sweep. So it's pretty straightforward. At the end of each fiscal year, a lot of accounts are swept into the Constitutional Budget Reserve, the orders of the requirement by the Constitution, because there's a debt to the Constitutional Budget Reserve. So those account balances get swept. And then the reverse sweep is just that. Immediately at the beginning of the fiscal year, we just reverse that so these accounts have a beginning cash account balance, so they can function. So we're going to have a presentation today in more detail on this from Legislative Finance Director, Mr. Lexi Painter, and we should have online Director of Legislative Legal, Megan Wallace, for some questions. If Mr. Painter could come forward into the hot seat there in the middle of the table. And he's going to walk through this presentation today, although the committee has seen this many times over the last several years. We've got some changes this year currently, and we'll have a detailed look at where we are at on our starting balances and exposure to these accounts. So, Mr. Painter, could you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and take us through this presentation, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Alexi Painter, and I'm the Director of the Legislative Finance Division. So today I'll be giving an overview of the so-called sweep and reverse sweep from the Constitutional Budget Reserve. So the CBR sweep is established in the Constitution itself. Article 9, Section 17 of the Alaska Constitution states Section D is a repayment requirement that says if an appropriation is made from the Budget Reserve Fund until the amount appropriated is repaid, the amount of money in the general fund available for appropriation at the end of each succeeding fiscal year shall be deposited in the Budget Reserve Fund. The legislature shall implement this subsection by law. And we'll kind of, as we go through the next few slides, touch on a few of these important clauses within. I would note that we had a CBR liability for many years, and then in the mid-2000s through the about, I think 2010 was the last payment, we repaid that liability and did not have, and had fully repaid the CBR. Starting in FY15, we began drawing again from the CBR and currently have a liability to the CBR of somewhere about 11 or 12 billion, depending on the interpretation.
Okay, and are you done with this slide?
Yes.
Okay, so we've been joined by Senator Hoffman, who is eagerly waiting his first question, and then we'll go to Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last section, the legislature shall implement this subsection by law. What, if anything, has the legislature done to establish what is swept? And I bring this up because of the power cost equalization program has never been included in any legislation saying that it is a sweepable item. That had to go to court to get resolved. So the broader question is all of the items, we have lists of items that are determined sweepable. How many of them have been interpreted as sweepable by state law, if any?
Through the Chair, Senator Hoffman, I think my next slide about the statute that was struck down by the Supreme Court will kind of get into answering that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Mr. Painter, you alluded to it just a little bit earlier. It's 10 to 12 to 14 million that's owed the CBR right now.
Billion.
billion, correct? I mean, let's just say for conversation, if I have just a little latitude, Mr. Chairman, I've always contended, you know, here's a constitutional requirement for repayment, and we talk about spending limits. If here's your spending limit right here in the Constitution. It's going to take us 120 to 140 years paying back $100 million a year to pay this back. This is just a comment, no question there.
Mr. Painter, could you give us a rough idea of the amount owed, the interest rate, and the terms of this debt?
Mr. Chairman, the amount owed is approximately $11 or $12 billion. There's a dispute between the Division of Legislative Audit and the administration on a billion of that. There's no interest on that, and the terms are essentially that it's a debt that we have until it's repaid, and this section is the sets up the mechanism, which is essentially that the general fund at the end of the year shall be deposited in the budget reserve fund. And so the exact mechanics of, you know, how that repayment works is, I guess, in dispute a little bit, but in the years that we had budget surpluses, that was one of the things that this body did, was either directly deposit funds back in the CBR as a repayment or allow the surplus to be swept back to the CBR at the end of the year, or a combination of the two.
Okay. We have any questions on slide number 2 from the senators online? Okay, we'll go on to slide number 3, please.
Okay, so slide number 3 is the reverse sweep, and I guess Senator Hoffman's question was 2 slides away, sorry. So the reverse sweep, as it's called, is an appropriation back from the CBR that returns swept funds back to the original subfund or account. The reverse sweep is an appropriation under Article 9, Section 17C, meaning that it requires a 3/4 vote to pass by the Constitution. So the sweep itself is effective at the end of a fiscal year, June 30th, and then the reverse sweep is typically effective the next day of the following, so which is the first day of the following fiscal year, July 1st. And I would note that in appropriation language, often the legislature will reverse the sweep only for the subaccounts and not for the general fund balance itself, because the general fund balance itself sort of gets reset by the sweep back to zero at the beginning of the year.
Okay, we have any questions on slide number 3?
Just a comment.
Okay, Senator Bishop.
You know, this is my own opinion, but this 3/4 vote, all it does is cost the legislature time and money to get that 3/4 vote. And I further believe that there should be no monetary policy in the Constitution. Thank you.
Any other questions on slide number 3 from the senators online? Okay, we'll go on to the next slide, slide number 4.
So slide number 4, the legislature did pass a statute that was intended to implement the sweep, which was in the Constitution. It says that the legislature shall implement this sweep by law. So the legislature passed AS 37.10.420. The Supreme Court of the state found this statute unconstitutional in a case called Hickel v. Cooper that was ruled in 1994. So in the absence of a statute since then, the executive branch has had to implement the sweep without statutory guidance. The legislature has not passed a new statute since then. And so the list of sweepable funds has been driven by legal interpretations of that one Supreme Court case, Hickel v. Cooper. The legislature could choose to pass a new statute to define the sweep, but has not done so. And absent this or a court case, which we've seen recently, the administration's interpretation is sort of the operative one, because they're executing it in the absence of statutes that are constitutional to follow.
Okay, we have questions on slide 4. Questions from senators online on 4. Okay, we'll go on to 5.
Yeah. I actually have a quick question.
Okay, Senator Von Imhoff.
So just to confirm, looking at slide 3 and 4, there was a the reverse sweep is an appropriation under Article 7 in the Constitution, yet the sweep itself was deemed unconstitutional. So we've had to sort of kind of implement it by hand, if you will, since then. Is that correct? Is that sort of what you're saying?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, our statute that implemented the sweep and determined what was sweepable and what was not was found unconstitutional, not the sweep itself. So essentially, the interpretation of what is subject to the sweep is been subject to essentially reading the footnotes of the Hickel v. Cooper case in the absence of a statute.
Okay, thank you. I understand that now. Thank you.
The next slide.
So this next slide goes through how the sweep works from a mechanical standpoint, and this is actually borrowed from a slide from the Legislative Audit Division from a couple of years ago. So the Department of Administration's Division of Finance, or DOF, their accountants actually calculate the sweep while preparing the annual comprehensive financial report, or ACFR. The sweep represents the unreserved, undesignated fund balances of the general fund subfunds. The accountants in the Division of Finance calculate the sweep in September. So in July and August, after a fiscal year is closed, agencies can still close out the books on that previous fiscal year. They stop that process and turn it over to the Division of Finance in September. And the Division of Finance then begins to work on the ACFR at that point. And again, while this work is happening in September, they're trying to determine the balance as of June 30th. So after the ACFR is prepared, which historically is by the end of October, but in recent years has been a little bit later, these numbers are audited by our legislative auditor, Chris Curtis, and her team, and the sweep amount is adjusted as necessary based on those audits. So it's not until we get an audited comprehensive financial report, which does not happen until somewhere between December and February historically, that we truly know what was swept back on June 30th, because that's the timing that's needed to get audited financial statements.
Okay. And I think if I recall this year, it wasn't until February we had the account balances.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. The last couple of years, it's been delayed a bit for various reasons. But yeah, we have not gotten audited financials back until February.
Okay, we have questions on this slide from members at the table. Question from senators online. Okay, next slide, please. Slide number 6.
So beginning with the fiscal year 19 sweep, the current administration expanded the scope of the sweep to include some additional funds. Most significantly, the interpretation of the sweep was expanded to include the Power Cost Equalization Fund and the Higher Education Investment Fund. Prior to FY19, those were not of the CBR sweep. And while this broadening did not actually add that many new funds, because those two funds are relatively large, they accounted for the vast majority of the balances that were swept in FY20. Combined, they were about $1.4 billion out of the $1.5 billion that was swept and reversed to the CBR that year.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As a result of the Power Cost Equalization Program not being swept, we know that the higher rate without the Power Cost Equalization Program has been billed to the citizens of Alaska that are eligible for the Power Cost Equalization Program. So how are those individuals going to get reimbursed for the months of July and of August since the law on the sweep, the lawsuit on the sweep was proven to be null and void?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I do not know the answer to that question. I can check with AEA that administers this program and get back to the committee.
But is it your interpretation that they are legally allowed to have that power cost equalization fund paid for on their behalf and get refunded?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I believe, yes, the the entire year. We funded the entire year, so the entire amount should go out eventually.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Are there questions on page 6? Okay. And I'd just like to reiterate that these funds were deemed unsweepable for years until there was a change from this current administration with a legal opinion from the Department of Law, which didn't survive long in the courthouse. We have operated for years with PCE not being sweepable. Any questions from the folks online, senators online on page 6?
Mr. Chairman, just on that point, hindsight's 2020, but looking back, I'll say my mistake was we should have did a friendly lawsuit right then.
Page number 7.
So slide number 7 covers the most recent litigation on the sweep. And if you have questions about the litigation, I think Ms. Wallace can answer them probably better than I can. The Alaska Federation of Natives brought a lawsuit against the administration challenging the sweepability of the PCE fund. And on August 11th, the Superior Court ruled in favor of the plaintiffs, finding that PCE should not be subject to the sweep. And the reasoning is that because while it is available for appropriation, it was not part of the general fund. So if you recall back on the slide with the constitutional language, the Constitution specifically says that it affects funds that are available for appropriation and part of the general fund. So both of those tests must be met. The Superior Court decision also indicates, although not as directly, that other funds that are statutorily established outside the general fund should not be subject to the sweep either. So the opinion or the decision states that the legislature has the power to create funds outside the general fund and has done so in circumstances such as creating the PCE fund, which is an account within the Alaska Energy Authority. The decision also cited the statutory budget reserve as an account that was created by the legislature outside the general fund, which would indicate that perhaps it should not be subject to the sweep. Historically, that fund has been subject to the sweep. Our division in legislative finance is reviewing the list to determine if other funds fall into this category where we've typically considered them sweepable, but the legislature established them outside the general fund. We've found one other in addition to the SBR that doesn't have as big of a balance. And so it's likely that based on the logic of this ruling that these other funds, notably the SBR, probably should not be subject to the sweep as well. But since there was not a court order on that matter, the administration would have to actually take action to reclassify them from how they've typically been treated as part of the sweep. The Higher Education Fund, which is the other big one that was added in FY19, is established in statute in the general fund, so this logic doesn't affect that fund, but the SBR, it potentially would.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
So in your opinion, and maybe Megan Wallace could also answer this, what are the chances that the Higher Education Investment Fund is not a sweepable item?
Ms. Wallace, could you help Senator Hoffman with that question? And
since it was never included prior to the sweep by the legislature or any of the governors in the past, as was the case with the Power Cost Equalization Fund.
Ms. Wallace?
For the record, this is Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, I have not seen a specific opinion from the Department of Law regarding classification of the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund, whether it was prior to the current administration or within this current administration, specifically addressing the rationale for including the higher ed fund on the sweepable funds list. But the difference between the Higher Education Investment Fund and PCE, as Mr. Painter noted, is that the Higher Ed Fund is explicitly created and established by the legislature in the general fund. And so even though it's used as kind of an endowment fund, the money is in, by statute, rests in the general fund. And based on the analysis in Hickel and the analysis of the court in the recent AFN case, there does not appear to be anything to indicate that at this point higher ed would be exempt from the sweep, because it remains available for appropriation by the legislature, because the legislature must appropriate out of the fund, and the fund can't be automatically utilized by the administration absent an appropriation, and the fund is currently in the general fund. So it's been our opinion that if that were to get litigated, it appears that a court would likely find that it is subject to the sweep, although neither of the cases that have addressed this issue have specifically
so a follow-up, Mr. Chairman.
Ruled on this fund.
Yes, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In slide number four, as Mr. Painter pointed out, the legislature could pass a new statute that attempts to define what is sweepable. So if the legislature introduced legislation and had it passed into law saying that higher education was not sweepable, then it would not be sweepable?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, it depends. If the legislature were to pass a new statute implementing the sweep, and for no other reason other than it doesn't want those funds swept, identified this fund as one that couldn't be swept, that could be subject to challenge. We do have language from Hickel v. Cooper, which is the Alaska Supreme Court case that looked at Article 9, Section 17, and in Hickel v. Cooper, the Supreme Court did specifically note that while the legislature is required to implement that section by law, that it must do so within the plain meaning or within the terms of Section 17, and so the legislature would still have to follow the Alaska Supreme Court guidance on what it means to be available for appropriation. But the legislature also probably has other methods of looking where it's established or how that fund is to be managed if the legislature wants to reconsider whether or not this fund should be subject to the sweep.
Mr. Chairman, since the legislature and prior governors have never deemed the higher education fund sweepable, I think that says a lot. And it is just because of this administration including it as a sweepable item that it comes into play. So I would assume that if all the prior governors felt it was non-sweepable and all the prior legislatures felt that it is non-sweepable, that it should be looked at by the legislature in the course of a statute to comply with the interpretation of all the previous governors and all the previous legislators. My comment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We have questions on slide 7 from online senators.
Yes, this is Senator Wilson.
Okay, we'll start with Senator Wilson.
Mr. Painter, do you have a time frame of when that list of other funds might be available to the Senate Finance Committee to determine which other funds may be deemed similar to PCE or the Higher Education Fund?
Mr. Painter, can you help us with the list that you're going to lay in front of us here in a few minutes?
Senator Wilson, through the chair, I think we can probably produce the analysis of just the difference pretty quickly. I think we've gone through most of them. looking back to my lifeline there, but I don't think it'll, I think that analysis will be pretty quick for our position. The administration is presumably conducting their own analysis about whether there should be changes to the sweepable list and potentially implementing that, and I'm not sure what their timeline may be.
Okay, so if you could, when it's convenient for your staff, to go ahead and produce that for the Finance Committee, it'd be appreciated, and we'll compare it with what the administration does and sort out the differences along the way, I think. Senator Wilson, do you have a follow-up?
No, sir. Thank you.
Is there other senators online?
Yes. So, this is Bill Wachowski.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. This is for Megan Wallace. Could the legislature have the other sweepable funds put into the SBR or PCE fund and then sweep them back into their respective accounts at 12:01 a.m. on the, in the new fiscal year?
Ms. Wallace, could you help Senator Wilikowski with his tactical maneuvering?
Sure. For the record, Megan Wallace, Legal Services Director. Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, if the legislature wanted to make those appropriations at the end for the in the future, the legislature likely has the power of appropriation to make whatever appropriation decisions that it wants to make and could move money around. For example, in the upcoming budget that the legislature prepares next session, there would be risk to go back in time at this point, just because the sweep is a constitutional mechanism that happens at the end of the fiscal year, meaning that the sweep by law occurs, you know, on June 30th, 2021. So I don't know if it's a practical option for the legislature to go back for last fiscal year, but certainly something the legislature could evaluate as a policy choice in future years.
A follow-up, Senator Wilikowski?
Yes, I do. Megan, I guess in dealing with the funds from last year, it's, I guess, an open question as to what was swept and what wasn't under the court decision. Could the legislature pass in a budget bill this year, let's say this week, next week, something saying the funds are, I guess taking the proactive action and saying the funds are swept back, and then forcing somebody to sue if the governor's not going to take any action on it? The legislature could certainly do that and then force the governor to file a lawsuit if he doesn't want to do it.
Ms. Wallace, can you help us with that?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski. I'm not sure I'm tracking, you know, exactly what the hypothetical is, but the we don't, at this point, as Mr. Painter noted, we aren't sure exactly which funds this administration is or is not going to sweep. And assuming that, and so we don't have the answer to that question, but if money was swept into the CBR, it requires a three-quarter vote to appropriate that money out of the CBR and move it to anywhere else. And if the money is not swept, then it will remain in the accounts that it was at the end of the fiscal year as appropriated by the legislature. And again, there would be risk if the legislature went back in time and did any kind of appropriation mechanisms that arguably subvert the constitutional sweep.
Okay. We have any other questions on slide 7? Okay, go on to slide 8.
All right. So slide 8 is turning to the impact of the sweep on the budget. So based on the FY20 sweep list from the Division of Finance, the FY22 budget uses $367.4 million from these sweepable funds. And then since now we know for sure the PCE fund is not sweepable, that gets us down to $321.2 million of appropriations out of sweepable funds. However, not all funds are impacted equally. Legislative Finance Division breaks them into three categories. One is immediate impact. These are funds where there's no ongoing source of revenue to support current appropriations. These are your endowment funds like PCE or higher ed, although PCE is no longer sweepable, but where the only source of revenue in that fund is investment earnings. So without that fund balance, there's no funds available to make the appropriations. The next is partial impact. So these are funds where there's an ongoing source of revenue, but that ongoing source of revenue is insufficient to support appropriations. These are funds where there's, for example, designated general fund taxes, where we deposit the money in an account. We may appropriate more from that revenue source in the current budget than we expect to collect this year and expect to use the fund balance to make that up. Without the fund balance, there's a partial shortfall in that appropriation. And the third category is minimal or no impact. These are items where the ongoing source of revenue fully covers the appropriations, either because there's no appropriations out of the account in many cases, or there's sufficient projected revenue to make the appropriations in full.
Okay. We have questions on slide 8 before we go into the accounts.
Yes, I have a question.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. So it says subtracting the PCE fund would reduce it to $321 million. Is that the total funds, and how is that different than the programs that are funded by that? And the only reason why I say that is that when we had previous presentations here with Senate Finance, if I recall, it's between like $115 and $120 million worth of programs in one particular fiscal year that the sweepable funds cover versus the actual total sum of the funds themselves. Does that make sense?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff. So I think when we get to the next slide that shows the breaks down the amounts, it'll be a little more apparent. But I think if you compare this number to previous years, a big difference is the use of the statutory budget reserve in the FY22 budget. That was not the case in the last couple of years, and that increases the amount of appropriations from sweepable funds versus other years. And then again, this is just the total from sweepable funds. The unfunded amount is less than that, as we'll see on the next slide.
Okay. Senator Hoffman, do you have a question?
Yes, I do have a question, Mr. Chairman. When we're going through the sweep, how much financial impact is incurred in the accounting program to accomplish the sweep? Are we talking thousands of dollars, tens of thousands of dollars? I remember a large number in the millions to reverse the sweep, but how much expense is there just to accomplish the first portion of sweeping the funds into the Constitutional Budget Reserve account?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. So do you mean expense as in lost investment earnings or of actual?
Both.
So through the chair, the Division of Finance will find the numbers for the sweep regardless of whether it's reversed or not, because that's part of the financial report either way. So there's no kind of added impact of the sweep if there's no reverse, because there's always a sweep either way. But there is an impact potentially to investment earnings if the funds are not, if the reversal does not happen right away. In conversations with the administration, they don't seem to be planning to just, you know, absolutely on July 1st, they transfer all the investments and sell everything that minute. They recognize that that would be rather damaging to the state's finances, so it's a more gradual transition where they transition the investment management to match the CBR's investment allocations instead of those other funds. Depending on how long the sweep is not reversed, there's going to be a difference in how much money that's costing. But because the CBR is invested very conservatively and some of these long-term funds like the Higher Education Fund are invested pretty aggressively, with that fund alone, moving that to the CBR costs, $20 to $25 million in an average year in investment earnings. Some of the others, it's a bit less because they're not as aggressive, but there is certainly a significant cost in terms of lost investment earnings by putting them in that conservative fund.
Follow-up?
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We are talking significant numbers, and the impacts to the higher education fund, not only having the fund swept, but not being able to use $10 to $20 million to educate Alaskans seems to be a no-brainer to reverse the sweep, at least of that fund, because what we're doing here is denying higher education to citizens of Alaska to the tunes of millions and millions of dollars.
Well, I, Senator Hoffman, I think the issue here is politics, not finances. This, the committee over the years has never recommended not reversing the sweep. For these very reasons, it's a financial mistake not to do that, extremely costly to the state, and we're just getting into the cost. Plus, in the beginning of every budget cycle, for those watching at home, we go through all these accounts, and this is after the administration's budget people have gone through them and presented us a budget. They've given them a haircut, then we go through it looking for extra money in them and give them haircuts. So these accounts, as we get into this list, get reviewed by both the administration and the legislature every year to ensure that they're at their prudently minimum balances, so we can use the funds, especially the last several years and tight budget years, for capital projects and paying our operational costs. So this, what we're talking about here, Senator Hoffman, is actually increasing the state's overhead, not decreasing it, or increasing our deficit because of lost earnings, lost opportunity costs here. So I just thought I'd remind people that the process we go through, because some folks think that there's huge slushy accounts balances here that we're rat-holing extra funds, and that's not at all the case. We have a follow-up from Senator Hoffman, then go to Senator Bishop.
A follow-up. The money lost to the students of Alaska in getting a higher education fund is another very, very strong reason why we should introduce legislation to say that the higher education fund is not a sweepable item, because there are students that are depending upon these dollars to get a higher education, and without this being resolved and determined non-sweepable, their education is going to be put into jeopardy every single year when these dollars are swept and millions, if not tens of millions of dollars, are lost because of the way that the funds are invested. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Bishop.
Senator Hoffman covered my comment.
We have questions from the online senators on slide 8. Hearing none, we'll jump to slide number 9.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator Wilson.
Okay, just a second here. Senator Wilson, you have a question on slide 8?
Yes. Mr. Painter mentioned that the administration and order may not start the sweep right away in terms of starting to liquidate funds. Do we know if they plan or have started that liquidation process yet, since it's been over a month or so since the sweep has happened?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I could ask them officially. I've had informal conversations, but I think the committee may need to directly ask them about their plans. Given the timing, where we don't know the audited balance for quite a while, I doubt that they would want to completely move the money yet, because they don't know how much money to move until the audit is complete. But I'm not sure of their exact time frame, and we can reach out to the administration and
we've asked that question before, and the general response, as I recall, is the technical sweep is the beginning of the fiscal year, but the mechanical sweep is much later, could be into November, December, after they have account balances. They've got to figure out what accounts and how much in each account to actually move the money. So it takes months, not days and weeks. But we can try to refine that a little bit more, Senator Wilson. But as I recall, that was a testimony previously here at the committee with the auditors when we went through the mechanical portion of the sweep. And to remind folks at home, there was a time several years ago when the reverse sweep did not take place during the regular legislative session. And the legislature stepped in the following January, I think, and reversed the sweep because of the accounting quagmire was at such a magnitude it was prudent to fix the mess. And clearly, as we're talking about here today, just getting into it, we're talking tens of millions of lost revenue that the supporters of blocking the reverse sweep are costing the state. So, any other questions on slide number 8? We're going to slide number 9.
Mr. Chairman, the next slide shows the summary of the impacts by category, and I said there were three categories, but really we have to break it out into a fourth, which is the immediate impact pending interpretation, which is the statutory budget reserve. It's either an immediate impact or does not belong on the list, depending on how the administration decides to handle it. So the first column is the projected sweep balance in FY21, and this is our own Legislative Finance Division projections. The next column is the amount used in the FY22 budget. The next column is the amount available after the CBR sweep. So this is the amount of ongoing revenue for these funds, and you can see it's no revenue for the ones with the immediate impact. And then the final column shows the shortfall due to the CBR sweep. So collectively, there's a shortfall of about $142 million due to the reverse sweep. And these are appropriations that are in the budget, in the enacted budget, but are currently unfunded because of the lack of revenue. In the next few slides, we'll get into the details behind each category and the funds that are within.
So, Mr. Payne, that concludes this slide.
Yes.
Okay. So on this negative $142 million, does that factor in that power cost equalization is not sweepable?
Mr. Chairman, yes. Okay. Power cost equalization is not listed on here.
And the statutory budget reserve, how is that accounted for in this slide?
Mr. Chairman, that's the purple item. It's the immediate impact pending interpretation. So it's either in, or if the administration chooses to reclassify it, it could be out. So the $80.7 million from the SBR is counted in the $141 million.
Okay. So if it is not sweepable, we just subtract basically $81 million from the $142.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. So we're talking a significant budgetary impact. That's a point I want to try to call out to the committee. This is not a minor issue as far as the impacts of to the state. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. And can you explain why this shortfall of $80 million is taking place? Is it, again, as a result of different philosophies on investment?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman, so the shortfall, I mean, as far as I can tell, I don't want to comment on politics, but it seems to be a political matter rather than a financial matter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, it's a financial mess derived from a political leverage matter, frankly, that's gone awry. Any other questions on slide number 9? Okay, we'll go on to slide number 10.
All right, so slide number 10 shows the two with the immediate impact. So the higher education fund is by itself there on the top. The projected sweep balance is $416 million. $21.8 million is used in the current budget. There's no revenue available after the CBR sweep because the source of revenue for that fund is investment earnings. So without a fund balance, there's no investment earnings, nothing available. So that shortfall in the last column is the entire amount of those appropriations because there's no funding left after the sweep to meet those. Similarly, with the statutory budget reserve, if it is subject to the sweep, the projected balance is $410.7 million. The governor vetoed $330 million of appropriations from this source. So we're only using $80.7 million in the budget after the vetoes. There's nothing available after the CBR sweep because, again, there's no ongoing source of revenue. So that entire $80.7 million is a shortfall, assuming that the sweep is not reversed or the fund is not deemed not sweepable.
Okay. Questions on slide 10? I just have a concern, Mr. Painter. The Alaska Higher Education Fund, they're roughly $400 million rounded off. Once we put it in the CBR, it's available for spending with a three-quarter vote, and that's what we've done with the CBR. We've spent, what, $12 billion out of it? So my concern is this money then ends up in the CBR, and it's just expensed in the general operations of the state. Or if we can protect it and leave it in the Higher Education Fund, it'll spin off revenue or dividends every year in for practical purposes for perpetuity to help young Alaskans get a higher education versus us meet a budget obligation in 1 year or possibly over 2 years and the money's gone. So I think all of us sitting at this table have seen billions go out of the CBR, out of the savings accounts. So that is a concern. It's money is not going to some place where it's going to sit. It's going to go to some place where it's going to get liquidated. You want to slide 11, please?
So slide 11 shows a little detail about the items that are funded by the statutory budget reserve within that $80.7 million. So the governor had vetoed $320 million that was appropriated from the SBR to the PFD, along with the amount from the general fund, other than $8.5 million for administrative costs. So depending on this SBR status, the dividend amount that reflected was different. So if the SBR is swept and unavailable, then that veto would have been a dividend of $525. If the SBR is not subject to the sweep, then the vetoed PFD would have been $1,025 because that $320 million would have been able to go out as well. The statutory budget reserve also funds a number of items that were not vetoed. So there's $4.15 million for school debt reimbursement, and then also $76.5 million of capital projects, and I won't go through all of them, but the highlights on here, $10 million for the Matsu Borough pavement rehab, $9 million for the Houston Middle School, $8.5 million for West Sitton Access, $36.5 million for various DNR projects, including $10 million of fire break construction, and then $6.3 million projects for other agencies.
Could you help me with your second paragraph before I go to questions from Senator Hoffman?
Sure.
So I understand that the governor vetoed the dividend after the funding was blocked from an $1,100 dividend down to a $525 dividend, then he vetoed the $525 dividend to zero. So if he did not veto the $525 dividend to zero and the SBR is not swept, which is highly likely that's the case, then the dividend would be coming out this fall at $1,025. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
I didn't hear you.
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct.
So then the shortfall from the targeted amount that the legislature passed of $1,100 dividend would have been just $75 per individual.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. So we
actually took it from $1,025 to zero. Unless I'm reading the numbers wrong.
That's correct, assuming, which when the governor did his vetoes, I think there was no way to know that the SBR status might change. But yes, that's correct in effect.
Okay, we have Senator Hoffman, you had a question?
Yes, could you provide me and possibly the committee of the school districts that are being affected by the $4.1 million in school debt reimbursement? I know that there are many throughout the state of Alaska, but the largest being the Matsu, Anchorage, and Fairbanks, and possibly Juneau. But it would be interesting to see if it is not reversed, what financial impact and how this $4.1 million is going to be spread across the state It is going to be picked up. The question is, are we going to reverse the sweep, or are we going to pass this $4.15 million on to local school districts, thereby passing it on to local governments and eventually the citizens of those school districts? So I would be interested to see the financial impact by school district on how this $4.15 million is going to be passed on as a burden to the citizens of Alaska.
Mr. Painter, when you put that together for the committee, which should be pretty easy to do, we work with that list all the time, could you also include the REA financial impacts of budget vetoes on the rural schools so we can keep track of that as time goes on? Because there is a disparity here between the rural schools outside the organized boroughs and how the organized boroughs are being treated. And it's starting to compound, and quite frankly, an alarming dollar spread. And I think this committee, this next winter, is going to be looking at the questionable allocation of student dollars amongst the rural schools and the non-rural schools. I think the federal government has questioned that the rural schools appear to be light. So we'll be looking at that as we try to figure out the status of that also. So this is just part of a bigger concern dealing with the distribution of the state treasury amongst rural and urban schools. We have questions on slide 11 from anybody out, the other senators. Okay, well, we'll go on to slide 12.
Mr. Chairman, slide 12 deals with the funds for which there's a partial impact, so where there's some ongoing revenue, but it's insufficient to meet all of the FY22 amounts. So the first column here of numbers is the projected sweep balance in FY21. So collectively, these funds, about $104.5 or $106 million, projected to have been swept in FY21. In FY22, we're spending collectively $168.6 million out of these funds. And then the ongoing revenue to these funds in this next column is $129 million. So that's short by $39.5 million versus the appropriations. So these are all items where there's some funds, so there may not be an immediate impact or full impact to a program, but there will be some impact without a reverse sweep to utilize that fund balance. I won't go through every single one. I'll just mention a few particular highlights. The top one, the Oil and Hazardous Substance Release Prevention Mitigation Account, or the SPAR Fund. We project a $1.5 million shortfall. OMB's numbers that they came out with on Friday are actually about twice that, a $3 million hole, so we're reconciling those differences. There's several funds within the Department of Labor that are accounted for here, the State Employment and Training Program, Worker Safety Compensation Administration account, and then down 1203, the Workers' Compensation Benefit Guaranteed Funds. These are all funds, and also the Vocational Rehab Fund. All these are funds that impact the Department of Labor's activities. There's a few other DEC funds, the Commercial Passenger Vessel Environmental Compliance Fund. That shortfall may not be quite as big as it appears, given that there seem to be more cruise ships in the spring forecast anticipated. So that hole may be a little smaller than we have on our sheet. There's several funds here that impact health and social services programs. So 1168, Tobacco Use and Education Cessation Fund. We project a shortfall of about $2.6 million for that fund. Similarly, for 1180, the Alcohol and Other Drug Abuse Treatment and Prevention Fund, we project a shortfall for that fund of $842,000. And then down at the bottom, the two marijuana tax accounts, the Recidivism Reduction Fund and Marijuana Education Treatment Fund, both have substantial shortfalls, and that's because of unexpectedly high revenue in previous years that we're spending in the FY22 budget, but without that access to that balance without a sweep, there's substantial shortfalls, nearly $5 million for the Recidivism Reduction Fund and $2.8 million for the MET Fund, as it's called, the Marijuana Education Treatment Fund.
This was a capital income fund of 1197. It's more of a parking garage for capital budget projects. We've used it over the years. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, it's now designated for deferred maintenance. So specifically, the money going out is for deferred maintenance projects throughout the state. With the high investment returns in FY21, there's a pretty significant balance in that fund unspent after the FY21 budget. A portion of that was to be spent in the FY22 budget on deferred maintenance. So there's an $18.5 million hole between the appropriations and the expected revenue in FY22.
Okay, so that's pretty easy to fix. You just don't do your major maintenance and you don't. But before I go on to Senator Bishop's question, I want you to tell the committee, what kind of protection do we have within our financial system to make sure we don't overdraw these funds so that they just, the administration just doesn't spend what they want to spend and come back and give us a supplemental and say, oh, well, there was a shortfall in the budget because, you know, these funds were swept. So, you know, we need an appropriation because we already spent the money.
Mr. Chairman, the administration is restricting those funds so that to prevent overspending. So that may mean sending letters to grantees saying that their grants will be prorated. It may mean curtailing activities or with deferred maintenance, simply doing fewer projects. Generally, the administration does not budget assuming they will get supplementals. So they may restrict activities in the meantime to make sure they don't run out of money.
Yeah, I think they did some vetoes expecting a supplemental. We'll talk about that when the supplementals hit the table in February. So we're looking at here is basically $31 million, take out the maintenance issue because we can postpone that. So we've got basically a $31 million budgetary negative impact that the administration has to figure out how to deal with.
Mr. Chairman, for deferred maintenance for the last capital income fund, the whole is $18.5 million. $31 million is the projected revenue in FY22.
Right. Well, Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So on that point, 1197, some of those projects were vetoed, I believe. So anyway, I want to go back to me for 1052, the SPAR fund. You know, that's troubling. The administration says that's over $3 million. I mean, they're our first responders to uninsured spills, cleanups on our land and water. It could be an environmental nightmare, and that needs to be addressed. They all do, or they wouldn't be in there. They're important, but there's others here I could speak about. I mean, an IOU. To an injured worker from the Department of Labor, I don't think that's satisfactory at all. So, thank you.
Other questions on page 12 of the impact? So these impacts are above what we talked about earlier, is the opportunity cost of capital that Senator Hoffman brought to the table. So probably well over $50 million so far.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. And so moving on to the last category, these are the minimal or no impact. You can see that quite a few of these in the amount used in FY22 budget is zero. So these are funds that may have a balance, but we're not currently utilizing them, such as the Vessel Replacement Fund that we utilized a bit in previous years and then gained a little bit more money in with the sale of some vessels. That is not being used in the FY22 budget. So there's no impact immediately. Similarly, the Rail Belt Energy Fund has not been used in a number of years. That amount has no impact. There's a few others where there are ongoing appropriations, but there's sufficient revenue to cover them. 1151, the TVEP account, as it's called, Technical Vocational Education Program account, there's sufficient ongoing revenue to meet the projected expenditures in FY22, so there's no impact of the sweep for that fund. So these are the ones that are not impacted. And again, you can see it's not a whole lot swept, and most of what was swept was part of vessel replacement.
I think if there's one positive that comes out of this debacle, is that we'll have forced a prioritization of this list so the committee could look in this winter to see which ones of these accounts we want to just eliminate. We should be able to clean the list up. Clearly, there's some accounts that just have very small balances, and we've talked about this for a couple of years, you know, just closing those things down. So we can look at doing that regardless of the fallout here. But we have other questions on slide 13. It's our last slide. Questions online from senators online? Well, that concludes the day. Before everybody runs out the door, I'd just like to make a comment. Some elected officials think they're actually trying to saving money doing these type of maneuvers, and they're costing the state tens of millions of dollars to educate them on basic state finances. And it's unfortunate that we have to go through these exercises and have to count in tens of millions to educate some of these elected officials. But this is one of the most ridiculous things I've seen at this table in years that accomplishes very little. It gives us a list of these accounts we can close that we were going to work on anyway. So as we work to close our budgetary deficit, these maneuvers force the opposite direction and hinder our ability to fix our financial position. So we look forward to working with OMB this January on these accounts, which ones we can close down, and we'll be asking the administration to come forward and go through these accounts and have a conversation with us on the impacts and the cost of these, along with our auditor when she has to go through and, you know, does the accounting and the reporting. I'd also like to point out that this just creates a lot of work for the administration and our auditors that leads to virtually, you know, no benefit. It's costing us, and we'll try to get an estimate that Senator Hoffman had asked about earlier, what's this cost in manpower to do this exercise. But it is substantial. And when we look at our audited financial statements, we've had trouble the last few years in some of our departments as far as having discrepancies and a list of action items that they need to work on. And this just increases that. And that issues in front of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee, and they're working with Leg Audit and the LB&A committee is looking at, from my understanding, setting up another process to try to track some of these discrepancies and try to work to minimize that list and get a cleaner set of books for us. But all this does is make a mess. And it's unfortunate that there's enough folks in this building that think this is just fun and games to cost the state tens of millions of dollars and countless hours of accounting exercise for nothing. So we'll stand ready at this table to reverse the sweep and clean these accounts up whenever there's support in the building to do so. But until that time, it's a big mess sitting in the administration's lap to deal with, and we'll be taking a tight review of it starting in January. And then we'll take a look at the budget process and see next year's budget process how we want to deal with these accounts. So I would thank Megan Wallace, Alleged Legal, and her team for the work that they have done, and Alleged Finance, and Lexi Painter and his team. And we'll bring this issue back before the committee in probably February and try to work through it and see how expensive basic financial education is to some of our colleagues in this building. It's in the millions, tens of millions. Meeting adjourned.